Soldier Day Podcast is a product of the Non-Commissioned Officer and Soldier Programs Directorate at the Association of the United States Army, also known as AUSA. Soldier Day subjects focus on those topics that are relevant and needed by our soldiers and their families serving the regular Army, Army National Guard, and the Army Reserve. Hello, everyone. I'm Command Sergeant Major Retired Troy Welch, and welcome to this edition of Soldier Day Podcast. Today, we turn our focus to the AUSA Fellowship Program with our newest fellow, Lieutenant Colonel Brittany Woods. Lieutenant Colonel Woods is assigned to the Association of the United States Army as a research fellow and subject matter expert and advisor on security, cooperation, and foreign affairs. She coordinates with various DoD components and affiliated agencies, civilian organizations, and key stakeholders in congressional committees and offices on strategic initiatives, development of Army programs, and modernization of the force. A military police officer by trade, with experience in law enforcement, physical security, force protection, joint, combined, and multinational operations and planning. Lieutenant Colonel Woods, thank you so much for joining us today on Soldier Day Podcast.
Sergeant Major, thank you for having me. I'm definitely excited to be part of the Soldier Day Podcast.
Well, we're excited to have you. Ma'am, I think we'll get started with maybe learning a little bit about you. So if you wouldn't mind, would you tell our listeners where you grew up and why did you join the Army? Why did you pick the Army?
Well, excellent question, Sergeant Major. So I grew up as an Army brat. My father was in the military police corps as well, actually. He was both an enlisted soldier, got out, went to college, and then came back as an officer. So I got the fortunate experience as a young child to move around and experience all different parts of not only the United States, but the world. We lived in Colorado, Virginia, Alabama, Kentucky, and we spent some time in Germany, which was probably my favorite. I was young at the time, but I was able to attend both a German kindergarten and a DoD kindergarten. So I'm well-versed in cutting very straight lines with scissors. So if you need an extra on that, just let me know. My dad retired in Kentucky outside of Fort Knox, finished my high school years at Fort Knox High School. And so I was just always immersed in the military lifestyle and the Army lifestyle growing up. And I definitely appreciated the opportunity to meet new people, new experiences, new places to live, different environments across the United States. And then definitely the camaraderie and the family kind of unit build that the Army is so well known for. So that definitely played a large part in me wanting to join the service as well.
So coming from that Army family, you kind of understand the family dynamic, but is that probably the main reason that motivated you to join, watching your father and his experiences and what you experienced as a family member?
Absolutely, Sergeant Major. I mean, the military has always been an important part of our family, and then just seeing all the positives, and obviously there's some negatives associated with living a military lifestyle. As exciting as moving is, it can also be hard. It definitely encouraged me and motivated me as a young person to serve my country and give back to the United States and the communities that I'd been in for so long and to help continue the tradition.
Well, that's awesome. And I appreciate you saying that because for our listeners out there who are family members, especially the young people who are attending high school right now, maybe thinking about making the Army or any type of service, a career, for you to share your experiences like that, I really appreciate that, and I'm sure they will too. So my next question was going to ask, what made you decide to become an officer? And I'm going to assume that that kind of tied into your father's path. But how did you receive your commission? And is that why you became an officer?
A little bit of both. Like I mentioned, growing up, we were around military communities. When we lived in Colorado, I was in middle school and had an opportunity to attend a summer education program at the Air Force Academy. And that was kind of my first introduction to service colleges and the uniqueness of those institutions. And being young, I was incredibly inspired and motivated by attending that type of an institution and going to college, and whether it be the Air Force, I was equally as interested in West Point. That was kind of my young goal as a middle school kid, to get into one of those organizations. Then as I got older, you know, big high school student, I know the world is my oyster at that point. I was looking at different options. Some of my interests had changed. I wanted a little bit more flexibility with my education path and goals, and decided to go the ROTC route. So I ended up going to James Madison University, which is just down the road in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Great institution at the time, and I think even to this day, they had one of the best ROTC programs in the region.
Yeah, they do.
And absolutely, Sergeant Major. And it was a profound experience. Obviously, being a family member is much different than being involved in either the active army or even a program like ROTC. So it was a lot of fun, to say the least, and I really enjoyed the classes that we had on leadership, on training, on tactics. In the simplest ways I could put it is I really enjoyed playing army. It was incredibly motivating. I loved going to the range. I loved going to the field. I loved the camaraderie of the organization. I loved the leadership presented by our instructors, both NCOs and officers in the organization. So I knew that this was exactly what I wanted to do and that I was going to enjoy it immensely.
Yeah, a little bit different than playing army when you're a child, I would think.
Yeah, exactly. Real guns and bullets and running through the woods is a little bit different.
Exactly. So I got to ask, who was your first salute to? Was it your father?
It was my major.
Oh, that's awesome. But that was a proud moment for Dad.
Yes, it was.
So I'm going to assume, because that was one of my questions, is that why you became an MP is because what your father had done?
Well, he obviously gave me some basic insight as to what MPs do, but I had that from the perspective of a family member. But what I realized at the time, I commissioned 17 years ago, almost 18 years ago now, the MP Corps was one of the most tactically oriented, operational type jobs that a woman could be a part of. So since I really liked playing army, for lack of better terms, and like I said, the tactics, the field, the leadership, all of that stuff really kind of inspired me and motivated me. And MP Corps just kind of fit that bill. It's an operational corps and branch. It was a combat support organization. It's got a diverse field of mission sets from area security, route security, detention operations. So a lot of opportunities to be in the fight. And that's really what I wanted. It was everything I hoped it could be, needless to say. So that's kind of really what motivated me to be an MP. Obviously, things are much different now. We've made some changes in the DOD and the Army specifically, and definitely some exciting times. But the Military Police Corps had all of the opportunities that I was looking for. Like I said, specifically leadership, the platoon leader, the company command time, those opportunities to be with soldiers in training environments or potentially combat environments. And the law enforcement side of it, too, is actually quite fascinating and interesting. It gives us a lot of opportunity to help service members while they're stateside and, you know, garrison operations and all hazard response to any type of event that may occur.
You mentioned a couple of things. One, you mentioned diversity and then more opportunities for women in that particular branch, in that particular corps. What made you say that?
That many years ago, my options for branch choice, if you will, that could potentially keep me in a tactical type environment or an operational field was pretty limited. The MP Corps, the engineers, aviation was one, but obviously that's a very specialized branch, and just a very limited field of places that we could go. And when we learned about all the different branches and I saw kind of the robustness of the MP Corps and what it does, and the other thing that kind of stood out to me is the MP Corps had its first female soldier in 1943, I believe. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then the MP Corps started to integrate women into its units in 1975. So the MP Corps has been pretty well integrated, male and female, by the time I came in, you know, 20 some odd years. So it was natural for the organization to have female leaders, to have, you know, senior female NCOs, not as diverse and robust as it is today, but it wasn't unusual to see females in those leadership roles. And that definitely spoke to me at the time.
Yeah, well, that's great. If anybody's read my bio, I grew up in the food service field for majority of my career until I went out to be a first sergeant, then became a CSM, because you kind of come out of that world. And it, too, was an MOS that it wasn't all that surprising to see women taking key positions, you know, in leadership roles. It was also a very diverse MOS, which I enjoyed as well. So I can understand why you gave that some thought. So you've kind of shared a little bit of your perspective with us, and I want to kind of keep on this topic as your experience as a woman, and not only in the MP Corps, but in the Army as well. So what, if any, challenges did you face, and were there any different challenges as an MP?
There's always challenges for anybody, obviously, but for a woman specifically, where I found probably my most challenging situations was with other countries where women are not regarded in the same respect as the United States regards women. For example, in Iraq and Afghanistan, women play a much different role in their society. And when you're not only a woman in the military, but you're a woman in a leadership position, and you're forced to be put into mission sets that require you to be in charge and make decisions. That was probably some of my biggest challenges. One example was my first deployment to Iraq. I was in Mosul, and we sent all of our platoons to partner with local police stations. And it was a coach-teach-mentor type of a environment and some supervision and monitoring of how they're handling prisoners at the same time. But I actually lived in an Iraqi police station. It was quite the experience, let me tell you. But what was challenging is I was the second lieutenant, and the station chief was the lieutenant colonel. Not only do we have that rank difference to contend with, but here I am, a female as well. You know, learning how to be assertive yet respectful, maintain humility, but get your point across when needed to be, and then also understanding how to leverage support systems and networks and capabilities kind of across, you know, your organization and chain of command and all of that when necessary. So that was definitely an interesting experience. I met my unit downrange, and about a week later, I was living in an Iraqi police station with some prisoners. So
Quite the experience. Glad you touched on that assignment there. But your first assignment was actually at Fort Bragg. So I'm sure that was quite interesting. And so you said you met your first unit downrange. So I understand, you know, by looking at your bio, you spent quite a lot of time at Bragg, and then you've had multiple deployments. Can you tell us a bit about that?
You are correct. My first assignment was Bragg, but I reported to Fort Bragg and then immediately went downrange to Iraq. The unit that I was assigned to was already in Mosul, forward deployed. So that was, again, a quick blessing into the organization, you know, get out there, get moving, and figure it out. And I will say the support network from my NCOs and soldiers that I had in that organization was phenomenal, and they definitely set me up for success. And that's kind of been my foundation ever since. That first unit, those NCOs that were incredibly knowledgeable, and just by chance, that organization, they had just recently come back from a deployment in Afghanistan. A lot of them were seasoned, for lack of better terms, as much as they could be at that point, and had some experience. So they helped me out. They taught me what they knew. They were incredibly supportive and helpful. I appreciated that. I did stay at Fort Bragg for a long time. I was able to do my platoon leader time and my company command time there. And that is a group of very highly motivated, disciplined paratroopers, for lack of another better explanation. But it was good. It was a lot of fun. It was good while I was young. Now that I'm a little bit older, I don't know how I feel about jumping out of airplanes as frequently as I did back then.
Well, I don't blame you there.
From Fort Bragg, though, I was able to go to Hawaii, and I worked on the USERPAC staff, so the U.S. Army Pacific staff, which is the senior headquarters for the Pacific region for the Army. And that was also an incredibly eye-opening experience, going from a tactical level organization like company command and experiencing multiple deployments to an Army Service Component Command, which is three and four star level organization, gave me a whole different perspective of the Army. It brought me in contact with a bunch of other branches in the Army. So I was able to learn more about military intelligence, the Signal Corps, field artillery. I was in a G3 section where I interacted with all of these different people who had all these different experiences. That was incredibly enlightening and very exciting, for lack of better terms, because I had just been so focused on being an MP and doing MP things, and then to come see kind of the rest of the Army, it was incredible. While I was stationed and assigned to USERPAC, we did a lot of traveling into the Pacific with our partner nations, did a lot of engagements and exercises. At the time, there was still a lot of rotations for some of the senior headquarters, the Corps level headquarters and division level headquarters were still deploying a lot to Iraq and Afghanistan. What USERPAC did is they created a small contingent of their headquarters that would go out and participate in these annual exercises with all these partner nations that we've had for years and years and years, to kind of go in place of the 25th Infantry Division who was deployed, or the 1st Corps headquarters who was just coming out of a deployment. So I got to do all of those things that these other headquarters used to do. Went to Thailand, Korea, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, Malaysia, Vietnam, all sorts of great opportunities with the different countries. And it really opened my eyes to how crucial and important those relationships are that we build with our international partners, whether it's an engagement or an exercise that your headquarters is doing, or even if it's the international student that's in your PME course with you. Those relationships are key, and they're everlasting. They don't ever forget, you know, the great experiences they have with U.S. soldiers in any type of engagement or environment. So that was a lot of fun. And then after Hawaii, I went to Korea for 2 years. That was my last assignment on the joint staff. Yes, that was in Korea during some exciting times. when the president came over and met with KJU, so that was pretty intense, needless to say. And then just these past couple months with the COVID outbreak, as it kind of moved across China and Asia and into the Korea and Japan area. So learned a lot there as well. The joint staff is, again, a different kind of perspective of how the Army supports the DoD as a whole and how the Army's capabilities and unique specialties really kind of complement some of the other services, and then how they can help support us in various missions and stuff.
Having spent 5 years in Korea myself, and then part of that as the USFK and 8th Army Sergeant Major, I can appreciate what the MPs went through, because I was there when President Bush came over. And you're right, that's quite an event. All the things that have to go in place, and they send the advance team in, and you got to work with them, and everything's got to be done just right. And it's very painful for the MPs. It wasn't so much painful for me, although I had my own set of pains. It was more so that MP commander and the joint staff. It puts him through the paces, to say the least. So I definitely have an appreciation for what you went through while you were there doing that. So that brings us to here. I'm really interested to know, you know, how did you learn about the AUSA fellowship program, and what was it that attracted you to it? And what type of opportunities will this position present you?
So my first real engagement and interaction introduction to AUSA was in 2013. I was stationed in Hawaii with USERPAC, and I was selected to attend the AUSA conference with USERPAC and work our booth, so to speak, the USERPAC booth, the AUSA conference. And that was just an amazing experience, like mind-blowing. The conference center was huge, the amount of people that participated. But what that really did is that introduced me to what AUSA was as an organization, kind of a little bit more in depth versus just some of the periphery that I had known leading up to this point in my career. I spent some time at a conference to learn and interact with some of the folks that were hosting the event. One of the gentlemen that came with me, one of our senior civilian members that came, was also very active in AUSA. We talked a lot, learned a lot, and I realized kind of the scope of not only what AUSA does for the industry and kind of the big Army picture, but also all of its impacts for the soldiers and the family members, the education, the support networks, the building the relationships with the communities through kind of AUSA at the different installations. And I thought, wow, this organization does a whole heck of a lot more than I could have ever imagined. So that was kind of my first exposure to AUSA. And then just kind of from there, I would keep up with the different publications and some of the events. And then obviously I thought, man, if I'd never get a chance to go back to the conference, that would be a really cool opportunity. That being said, the actual fellowship. So the Army offers multiple broadening assignments or broadening experiences that you can compete for. And as I was transitioning out of Korea, something I'd always been interested in is some sort of broadening opportunity or a fellowship of some sort to, again, give me a different perspective of how the Army interacts with either the community or industry or whatever. And I saw the AUSA fellowship as an option. And I thought, well, this would be pretty cool. It's in a region of the country that I love. And when I talked to some of my friends that either knew a previous fellow or some of the AUSA leadership within the region, they kind of helped inform me a little bit more about what I would be able to do during this. And this fellowship is designed to allow for research opportunities, networking opportunities, education is kind of the primary focus. And that's something that really interests me. Coming out of the joint staff, we are focused on policy and kind of program development and oversight. And I feel like that type of knowledge and understanding of how the Army is moving forward as an institution and how we can help facilitate that, whether it's through organizations like AUSA or just educating our service members, I thought, what a great opportunity. So I applied and luckily was nominated and received the position. So I'm super excited, and it's been a great experience so far. Your last question, the opportunities, the big thing that I've noticed so far is the networking opportunities, not only within the Army, but also within the local community and a lot of the organizations that support the military and the Army through either industry capabilities, community, volunteering, et cetera. So that's been huge. And then also give me a chance to focus in and do some, I guess maybe research is a good word, but also some self-development on some of the initiatives that the Army has that I may not have been able to have the time to do if I was in a traditional military job.
It was kind of interesting when you told me about how you first, you know, really got an in-depth look at what AUSA actually does. You know, that was pretty interesting. And then to see the fellowship as part of one of the broadening assignments that the Army has, and then I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but that experience that you had when you attended the conference, you know, may or may not have been probably one of your driving factors to apply for it. But I'm going to tell you what, we're very happy you did, and we're glad you're here. You get asked this question a lot. SMA Dan and I've done several forums, and I will tell you one of the big questions that we get asked all the time is, can you tell us what AUSA does beyond award recognition ceremony or something of that nature? And we get into some of the things that you talked about that, quite frankly, when you said it very well, on the surface, you kind of get an idea of what AUSA does, but you really don't know until you kind of dig into it a little bit and have somebody really kind of sit you down and say, this is what they really do, you know, in addition to what you see on the surface. It's almost like an iceberg, right? So the majority of what you see or don't see is underneath the water, right? You know,
exactly.
It's kind of like that. What you see on the surface is not necessarily everything we do. So good for you for kind of asking the questions and then learn more about it and then be intrigued enough to apply for the fellowship here. And again, we're very happy that you're here. And I want to thank you for your candor and your openness to talk about some of these topics. I know a lot of them aren't easy. And if we have more time, I will get into your time as a platoon leader and as a company commander and how you empowered your squad leaders, because that's a hot topic. But maybe we can save that for another time. But I would like to give you the last word before we close it out for any closing thoughts that you might have.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. My closing thoughts would be, no matter what your rank or position or station is in the military, for me, what's worked best is a healthy sense of humility, an openness to kind of understand and listen to people, and then the ability to kind of give back and mentor and coach and teach where you can, understanding that you may not always be the smartest person in the room, but then potentially conversely, if you are, you owe to train and educate that next group that's coming up. So I have had great support networks throughout my entire career. My NCOs and soldiers have been phenomenal. My senior leaders have been great when it comes to providing me the opportunities that I needed to progress through my career appropriately. And like I said, I've just done that with a smile on my face, a good attitude, and a healthy dose of humility to make sure that I am looking at things appropriately and fair and give everybody the opportunity they deserve. So thank you again, Sergeant Major. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Oh, well, ma'am, thank you. And very well said. I appreciate your thoughts. And I agree with you. Don't be stingy with your knowledge, right? Somebody gave it to you. I think you have an obligation to share that. So good on you for doing that. Well, our time has come to an end, and to close this edition of Soldier Day Podcast, all of us here at the Association of the United States Army want to thank Lieutenant Colonel Woods for sharing her story and providing insight on women in the military and her experiences as a military police officer. Lieutenant Colonel Woods, as an Army alumnus, I can say from all of us across the country, thank you for all you have done to improve our Army and maintain the Army's reputation as the greatest land power force in the world. AUSA is lucky to have you on the team.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters Podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters Podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.